Hi everyone, it's Aliza Licht here, your host, and I'm so thrilled to share that my new book, On Brand, Shape Your Narrative, Share Your Vision, Shift Their Perception, is out now. I hope you'll pick up a copy because personal branding is for everyone. It's for the new graduate starting out, the middle manager looking to level up, the executive who wants to be a thought leader, the entrepreneur starting from scratch. It's for anyone who wants to pivot or transition into something new. Because having a strong personal brand means that your name gets dropped in rooms you're not in, and that you're thought of for opportunities that other people haven't even heard of yet. So pick up a copy, and I can't wait to hear what you think. Hi, this is Aliza Licht, and this is Leave Your Mark, the podcast, where I brew fresh career advice with some of my most inspiring and successful friends. It's professional advice that you can action immediately, whether you're just starting out in your career or well on your way. With a massive to-do list and a large cup of coffee, I promise that you can get it all done and still have time to post about it. Bea Shapiro is the longtime New York Times beauty columnist and the founder of Ellis Brooklyn, a sustainably sourced luxury fragrance, body care, skincare brand that is currently carried at Sephora, Ulta, Credo, Revolve, and so much more. She's also the author of Skin Deep, Women on Skincare, Makeup, and Looking Their Best, a compilation of her best read columns. Bea, welcome to Leave Your Mark. This is very full circle for me to have you on the show, as you well know. But for everyone listening, Bea is the journalist who did my DKNY PR Girl reveal feature in the New York Times back in the day. So great to see you and what you've done. And I cannot wait to share your story.
Thank you so much for having me. It truly is full circle. That story, that reveal was such a moment. And it's funny because I remember this is back in the day when secrets could actually be held. I feel like these days, how do you keep a secret like that? And I knew people in the industry that didn't even know it was you. I mean, you really kept that profile really low in a weird way, but also really high. And then Twitter, of course, like Twitter has just imploded. So definitely full circle.
Full circle. Well, you've done amazing things since we last saw each other. So first and foremost, where are you from?
I grew up in Seattle area in a town called Federal Way, which is south of Seattle. It's so funny because Federal Way sounds like totally nondescript. Like what kind of name of a town is that? But actually there is a few other beauty people from there. And so Daniel Martin, who's a makeup artist, also is from Federal Way. So we always have like a small little laugh, but yeah, Federal Way, Washington.
Sounds like they need a rebrand for that name, but like, that's so funny. Well, before being a columnist for the New York Times, you actually had a career in law, which I had no idea about. So you went to Georgetown.
I did. I went to Georgetown Law, and I was that classic person that didn't know what they wanted to do. Funny fact about me, I've never had an internship in my life.
I know,
this was a different era. This was an era where I felt like during college, I had jobs, but they were always like paying jobs. Like they were like being a waitress. They were not experience building jobs. I had really great grades, but I just had no real work experience in the sense of like, where is this career going? And so on, not a whim, I would say, but I was like in desperation mode, like all my friends had jobs and I was like, what should I do? And so I studied for the LSAT and I went to law school.
And then you ended up, did you end up in a law department at a hedge fund?
I ended up working for this mega big law firm in New York City called Schulte, Roth & Zabel. They invented legally the hedge fund. And so that's what I worked on was hedge fund law.
Okay. So that is really different than what you do now.
Which is making TikTok videos in the morning for the brand and then answering emails.
I mean, I think that's like what everyone is doing. So what made you decide to leave and how did you even know that you wanted to be a journalist?
Well, first of all, I think a lot of attorneys are miserable.
That's very true.
If you live in New York City, I feel like you've met a lot of attorneys or have attorney friends and they're just miserable. So I actually don't regret going to law school. There was a moment in time where I was like, oh my gosh, what am I doing? I'm going to have this crazy debt load. I'm going to have this degree I'm not going to use. So I think already like it was misplaced that I went straight from undergrad straight to law school. And it was really because of fear, right? Like I was afraid I didn't have a job. I was afraid I had no direction. And instead of taking that moment to really figure out who I was, I just like stumbled headlong into life. And then I got a job at the law firm and I knew that I wanted to be in New York City. So the law firm was in New York City. They paid for my move. I worked for 8 months, not even a full year. And I was so miserable and I quit. And I had no plan. I had like $10,000 of savings I saved up. I still had law school loans I was paying. I mean, I was a hot mess. And that was when I took my big leap and was like, okay, what do I actually want to do? So I probably should have done that at 21 instead of 25, but it just didn't play out that way. But that's when I stumbled headlong into other things that I wanted to do. And then I realized I loved writing. So that's sort of like the segue into the New York Times.
But just because someone loves writing doesn't mean they get to work for like the New York Times. So how did you land that level of role?
That's so true. It's funny because I love young people and I work with a lot of young people in our staff. And I think that there is a very, very big difference, but also a small difference in some ways between somebody who loves writing and reading and somebody who's like, okay, I'm gonna go do this for my job. Of course, you have days where you're not writing well, but when you're a professional writer, you actually just have to get through it and deliver your copy. There's no such thing as like, oh my gosh, I have writer's block. I can't write today because you're a professional writer. So what actually gave me that work discipline was law, because you're doing so much work that you're like, oh my gosh, I don't want to do this today. And like, it actually instilled a ton of discipline. So by the time I got into writing, I covered fashion and that intersection of art and fashion at first. By the time I got to that, I was like, this is amazing. You know, I'm actually writing on stuff that I actually love to cover and love to learn, as opposed to, you know, moving periods around or commas around. And so I think if I'd never had that law experience, I might have taken some of the writing stuff more for granted. My early days, I would write a piece and I swear get chopped and edited so much that by the time it published, I would not even recognize it. So I think having come from the law world where I was like really not loving the actual work and moving into that, that actually made it easier for me. And so I started writing for little publications. Back in the day, there was style.com, which was amazing. I was like my little online Bible, I swear. And then I also wrote for other things. I wrote for AOL. If you guys remember that, I'm going to date myself now. I wrote for Yahoo. I wrote for kind of anybody. And this was this moment where things were shifting online. So they needed more and more content. And then I rolled that snowball. I rolled it all together and then got myself to New York Times.
So you pitched yourself cold then when you started getting those gigs.
Yeah, I did.
And by the way, I posted on Instagram this morning. I think everyone is feeling very in touch with AOL Instant Message right now, because if you've checked your DMs, they move them there. And it seems very, it just says add a note in your DMs now.
Oh, it's so vintage. Yes, it's such a vintage status update.
It's so weird. Okay, so you get to the New York Times. And of course, that's how I know you, writing for fashion. But where did the pivot to beauty come from?
Oh my gosh, the pivot to beauty was totally accidental. And I actually think in my career, it's one of the best things that happened to me. So I was sitting there at the New York Times. At the time, I was the youngest writer. I was like junior. I was below all these like amazing fashion writers. There was Kathy Horton in the department at the time. There was Eric Wilson. I just felt like, oh my gosh, I'm going to get the last dregs of every story. I'm going to get the worst, you know? And I did. And I would go chase those stories down. A lot of times they ended up being nothing. I mean, it was tough because I literally would be the last on the pecking order of like six people. So then the beauty editor left. She went to go do her dream job in the travel section. And so this position opened, and I'm pretty sure I might have been the last person, the last of six to be asked. But they're like, do you want to take beauty? And being the position that I was, it was so hard to get stories. I was like, well, yes, I do. Not knowing that much about beauty. I knew beauty as like a consumer. I knew beauty as little DIY, but like not really knowing the industry at all. And that's kind of how it started. So that was a long time ago. In retrospect, I remember being like, sure, I'll take it, but not being like particularly excited or thinking it was transformative or anything like that. But now I look back, I'm so happy I did, because I actually care a lot more about beauty now that I'm older than I do fashion.
I'm so with you. I never thought that would happen either, but I'm so with you. One of your mantras is love what you do. And that is a great sentiment, but it's so much harder in practice. So how did you make that a priority for yourself?
So that first time when I quit the law job, that really was like trial by fire. And, you know, as much as I was totally unprepared for that quitting, and if I was older, I would have prepared better. Maybe I would stay on a couple more months. Maybe I would have figured out health insurance.
Right.
But the fact that I did it, I was already prioritizing. And I think what I did when I quit, looking back, I'm like, okay, that was something pivotal for me, is that when I quit, I was like, you know what? There's so many people soul searching in New York City that I have to be really focused and I have to really put myself out there. Because I think in order to find what you love to do as a career, it's very similar to finding the love of your life. If you're going to fall in love with somebody or find a partner or whatever, you really have to take a risk. And that's really putting yourself out there for whatever it is. And I think that was the moment where I was like, oh, okay, it's writing. And then later on, when I started the business, it's the same thing. It's terrifying. One of my favorite quotes is, she was afraid, but she did it anyways, or something like that. I'm paraphrasing, but like literally these moves are terrifying. You know, it's not like, oh, I decided to quit and then I did this. No, it's not. It was like, oh my God, what am I doing with my life? So yeah, that's what I mean by finding what you love. I don't think a lot of people are willing to take that risk sometimes.
You're right. You're right. So you get pregnant and you can't find a fragrance. Tell us the story of what inspired you to launch Ellis Brooklyn.
So I'm, you know, sitting in the New York Times office, trying products all the time. I've actually always loved scent because I think from the behind the scenes aspect of scent, it's so different from makeup and skincare and hair care, where it's so detailed in the sense that, okay, let's talk about skincare. It's these ingredients, it's this performance, it's this before and after. In some ways, it feels more concrete. Whereas with fragrance, you're telling these crazy story sometimes, or lifting up memories from like high school just by smelling a scent. And that to me was kind of magical, because as a writer, it's so hard to describe scent. It's so hard to tell a story so succinctly. And I don't think you could ever match smelling a fragrance from like your boyfriend from college, you know? It's so tied to memory and so tied to stories that I always loved fragrance. And then when I became pregnant with Ellis, I was living in Brooklyn. I just thought that what we were breathing in was just as important as what we were putting on. And I think part of it was being in a city environment. It's funny because I actually just saw a news release where Dyson is putting out these new headphones and they actually has an air filter built into it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It filters out like 99% of pollution particles or something. And all my friends think that's crazy, but I was like, oh my God, that's amazing. I think when you become pregnant, you can get a little crazy about like ingredients, what I'm eating. And for me, also what I was breathing in. And so I just was really surprised that even though skincare, makeup, hair was moving in this direction of cleaner ingredients, safer ingredients, like this discussion was happening, that fragrance hadn't gone there yet. And so that's really where it started. And I just started digging around. I started talking to people and then I started the line.
When you were like, okay, I'm going to take this plunge. I'm going to build this company. I'm going to build this brand. What was your thought process as far as talking yourself out of the fear of like the time, financial, all the investment that it takes to actually do that?
I was a little naive in the beginning. And I say that because
I love that. Good answer.
I thought I knew a lot more about beauty because I was reviewing beauty. I think by that point, like 6-7 years, I had been reviewing beauty products, going in these press things. And I think you'll appreciate this because you worked on the PR side for brand, right? Is that the press people only know the finished product. They don't know the whole story that led up to it. And we only see the lovely finished good. And even when we get a lab sample, it's done. You know, maybe the packaging is not done, but like everything else is done. So I think I naively thought that, oh, I will start this company. I will grow it slowly, because I didn't start it because I didn't like my New York Times job. I started it because I felt compelled, like, hey, why isn't this happening? So I thought I could grow this thing very slowly. And like, I self-funded it in the beginning. So I was like, I'll have control over it. And yes, it was scary that I was investing my personal savings, but I thought I could, you know, slowly grow it. I quickly realized that you actually only have limited control over how you grow a company. It kind of takes on this life of its own. And even very early on, when we entered Sephora about a year and a half into the life of Ellis Brooklyn after we had a product and stuff like that. That was terrifying.
Yeah.
Because I had to take out loans. I had to do all this stuff just to put out like a bare minimum of product. And that was when I was like, oh my gosh, what did I get?
Like, are you in over your head? Yeah. I mean, I can't even imagine. So what kept you sane in those moments?
You know, I still kept writing for the Times. And I think the part that kept me sane was that I was still busy. I feel like if I only focused on what was going on at Ellis Brooklyn, I might have been like, oh my gosh, girl, you need to stop because this is crazy. I had a whole other job, so I wasn't reliant on it in the early days as an income and all that stuff.
So a lot of people have full-time jobs and have side hustles that they have fantasies of becoming bigger than just a side hustle, becoming full-blown companies. When you had to broach this with the New York Times, so let them know, because obviously you cover beauty and now you're creating a beauty brand. How did you navigate those conversations?
Sure. So I knew with Ellis Brooklyn, it was so focused on fragrance that in the early days, certainly, I just stopped covering fragrance. And that pretty neatly cut it out, because fragrance is so different from makeup and skincare and hair care. It's like it's literally its own thing. And so it was pretty neat in the early days. Certainly, as you grow bigger, it's much harder. But there are these totally non-competitive fields. Like, for example, if I covered Olaplex and K18, it wouldn't matter, right? Like, it's so, so different. But yes, you just have to be super transparent, because the New York Times is this institution. You want to respect that. So I just came out and was like very, very straightforward about it.
And were they like excited for you?
I mean, I think in the beginning, they're like, what is this? Okay. Oh, you know, so people have these projects. So in the early days, we also were tiny. So they're like, great, good for you. But it was a sound of like a side hustle, right? So as the brand grew and had press from other publications, funnily enough, my editor started to be like, oh, what did you release? Oh, what's this? So that was interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. There's always, it's like you're hopeful everyone is really happy for you, but then there's always people that are like, wait, why didn't I do that?
I think New York, so growing up in Seattle, it's very entrepreneurial. And I have to say the reactions from some of my New York friends versus some of my at home growing up friends were totally different. So in Seattle, most of my friends are like, that's amazing. Oh my gosh, so excited for you. In New York, some of my friends are like, how are you going to pay for that? Like, how are you going to finance that? Who are you going to hire? What supplier? You know, what's your credit line? I'm like, oh my gosh, I don't even know. So I have New York culture that we have is super fun, but also like super intense as well.
Yeah. And then there's always the people that are like actually taking on your role as a journalist because they want to take notes for themselves, right? So
it's like true. Yeah. You know, more recently, I would say I'm getting like DMs and pings and LinkedIn messages. Mm-hmm. Like, who's your supplier for these boxes? I'm like, I don't even know you.
So strange. That's so funny. Well, one of the things that I think is so beautiful about your line, and this is really you merging your skill set, it's like the way you write about beauty in general, and then the way that you obviously apply that to your brand is pretty special. Have people told you that before?
Oh gosh, I don't know. You know what's funny is when I was writing, I was so busy trying to like, quote unquote, make it in my own mind, especially in my late 20s, early 30s. I don't know if you went through this in your own personal journey, but I was always looking for outside affirmation. Like, was that good enough? You know, and now that I'm 41 now, now I'm like, wow, I was good. But I don't think I realized that. Is that weird? And I knew I was in the New York Times. I knew, but I didn't really know that I was good. Now that I'm older and people give me a compliment, it actually resonates with me. When I was younger, I was just like, well, it's the New York Times. That's why they think, you know, whatever, I have X, Y, Z access. That's not because of me, right? So yes, I have heard some of those compliments, which is so nice to hear, but I don't think I was fully able to accept them until recently, maybe the last few years.
You're stepping into your light. That's amazing. I love it. One of the things that you've said in the past, which I think is really important to talk about, is that you're a total outsider in this industry that is pretty much a Caucasian French male industry. And beyond that, obviously, you're an Asian woman. So tell us about the benefits of being an outsider, because I do think you come at it from a very distinct point of view versus everybody.
Oh, gosh. Yes, that's true. So, you know, when I first started Ellis Brooklyn, when I first started product developing was 9 years ago, because Ellis is 8 now. So I was pregnant with her. And then I didn't come out with the product for 2 years. So the brand is 7 years old. So those early days was actually really tough. And it's interesting because when I look back to that point and then compare it to today, it's actually changed a lot, which is a beautiful thing. But back then, literally every single person in the room was a Caucasian French male. And I love my Frenchies. I like to call them my Frenchies. I love them. You know, they're super fun. There's so many attributes. But I also think that if you look at other brands in the world, whether it's fashion or whether it's cooking or whether it's art or makeup or whatever, the diversity agenda, and I say agenda because it really does have to be an agenda to be more thoughtful about this, I've moved a lot further along. And so when I stepped into the room, always, it was pretty crazy to be like, oh my gosh, I'm the only, not only am I female, but I'm also a person of non-Caucasian background. So in the early days, I actually felt maybe not direct, overt discrimination, but I definitely felt like, oh, how does she have any taste in fragrances? Because she didn't grow up in this culture of fragrance, right? So I was born in Taiwan, but I moved really early to Federal Way, Washington. And so my background was not Grasse, France, was not Provence, was not Paris. And so I'd step into these rooms and I actually got a lot of early submissions that were straight garbage because they probably thought that I had no taste.
Well, they were wrong.
It's really fascinating. I mean, I had a really difficult time getting anybody to write me back. And I thought because I was in the New York Times, you know, I should be able to have these contacts, et cetera. So you move that to today and it's changed so much. And I still, in many ways, love to work with perfumers that are very quote unquote outsiders. So one of my favorite perfumers is Frank Vogel. We've made 2 fragrances together and we have 1 more coming on the way in spring. But he's, first of all, a master in his art, but also he's German. He married his wife, who's Tahitian. He lives in Jersey. Like, he just decided to go his own way. Yet he's made iconic fragrances in the industry, so talented. And it's just like, I like people like that because what happens is I'm coming from a certain background. He's coming from a certain background. And then we come together and can make something interesting. I think when all the backgrounds are the same, what you're going to end up getting as a creative product is sameness. And so there's nothing wrong with having this French culture and this French background. But I think if the whole industry was like that, it's kind of boring.
Agreed. What's the hardest part of balancing 2 jobs, being a mom, hustling? Like, how do you make it all work?
With wine. No, just kidding.
Well, sometimes, I'm sure. Yeah.
Sometimes. You know, I really am the master of Google Calendar. I've made Google calendars for my whole family, basically. And then I have a written calendar on the refrigerator now. So on top of this, so I'm a mom, but I'm also divorced. So I'm managing a custody schedule as well. So that's why we started this calendar in the refrigerator, because it actually helps the kids know when they switch homes and stuff like that. And then the activities. And then I have a nanny. There's no way I could be a working person without a great nanny. And then I have, you know, travel and work and like all that fun stuff. So I'm a calendar queen.
I respect that. I'm a calendar queen as well. I send meeting notices to every person in my family for activities. The problem for the most part is they don't accept the meeting notices. So I still have to chase them down. But yes, I'm so with you.
I mean, I have a calendar notice from this morning that Ellis, my older daughter, has sweatshirt and sweatpants day for school dress up.
That's dress up. That's like, I mean, well, my daughter called me before and she was like, I'm about to go into bio. I forgot the glass jar. And I'm like, what glass jar? We never bought a glass jar. She's like, I know. She's like, can you go buy one? Are you busy right now? And I'm like, I'm literally in meeting.
Oh, no.
You're going to have to own that, girl. That's on you. I mean, like, it just doesn't end.
So it doesn't end. It keeps going with older children.
It keeps going. Yep. Totally keeps going. So you've come a long way since the beginning, and I'm sure there's been bumps along the way. Looking back on your journey so far with this brand, was there ever a point where you were like, okay, like, I don't know if I can do this. This is just too hard.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I've had days with a brand where I'm laying on my back in the morning. I'm like, what did I just do? You know? And in many ways, being an employee at a company, I think for all those people who want to start companies out there, and you're an entrepreneur too, it's so hard. I always tell people, I think entrepreneurs are a bunch of crazy people, you know? Everything is so hard. And you have days where you literally are not winning on anything. And I think that I actually started working with a life coach, and she was referred by another beauty entrepreneur that I know. And that's been transformative for me, because I've actually had to be like, you know what? A lot of these things are not tied to my self-worth. Whereas with my writing, because my byline's on there, you're giving a piece of yourself with your writing. I just felt more natural sort of entangling my own like self-worth, achievement, etc. With the business, you have so many other aspects. You have people working for you. That I would say many times you're like, oh my gosh, what am I doing? That being said, I don't think I've ever felt as much of a high as when like a product launch comes out and your whole team is with you and comes out. And it just is this most incredible feeling that's unmatched for me in my career. Even when I wrote like a cover story for the Times, that was a real high at that point in time. But when you have a whole team that you worked super hard on something and it comes into life, it's magical. So that's what keeps me going. But then dealing with like, you know what, you're not going to have these perfect days. And that's okay.
Yeah, it's true. You once said, there's always time for reinvention. And I kind of loved that statement. What was that inspired by? And how do you think about reinvention?
Well, I kind of had two reinventions in my adult life. I went to law school and then I quit that. And then I went to New York Times and then I started the business. The business takes a vast majority of my time now. You know, I think the thing with reinvention is you can reinvent yourself at any point in time, but what kind of commitment are you willing to put into that? And I think the older you become, the more commitment you have to do, because when you're younger, you have time. Time is on your side. You have less commitments financially. You have less people relying on you. So I think that on the one hand, you can always reinvent yourself. On the other hand, you do have to consider where you are in life and like, what do you have to do to get there? I guess I'm on the one hand, really dreamy. I dream these big, huge dreams. But then if I'm going to do something, I'm going to do like the grunt work to get there.
That's probably the lawyer in you.
Maybe. I always wonder, like, why did I pick law school? And then I was like, oh, it's because I liked reading and writing.
Hey, whatever works. It took right? the box at the time.
It's so silly.
So when you think about fragrance, do you have certain fragrances that you choose based on like, if you're happy, if you're stressed, like your mood changes, you change your scent?
Yes, I do. Some days when I'm shooting content, I smell like a hot mess. I don't look like a hot mess. I'm like doing all these things in spring and all that stuff. But lately, because it's winter, I like warmer scents in the winter. So like vanillas and woods, warm musks, that kind of thing. So I do. But during COVID, I wore so much citrus, and I'm not really a citrus fragrance wearer historically. Literally every day I'd be like, orange groves.
It's so funny. I worked at a company where the founder wouldn't allow anyone to wear fragrance.
Oh, I've heard of those. A lot of some tech people are like that.
Oh, no, it was in fashion. So I used to be a huge fragrance wearer, and then like I stopped and I just started picking it up again. And I forgot how it is a form of self-care in a way.
Oh, absolutely. So I think it finally came to light during COVID. So I think in America, we're just getting there because the younger generation, Gen Z, actually loves fragrance. And I actually love the way they talk about it. And I love the way they experience it, which is very different from how I was taught. I was taught like, this is your signature fragrance. Buy a bigger bottle. Buy a bigger bottle.
Yes,
buy
your
bigger bottle. Whereas today, it's about your mood. It's an accent on your outfit. It's about who you are, how you feel that day. And it's about how it makes you feel. So they talk about emotions a lot. And there's actually these amazing studies, like real scientific peer-reviewed studies that talk about how fragrance truly affects our mood. And I think it really broke through during COVID because certain people lost their sense of smell. Your sense of smell actually is the number one potential cause of depression.
Wow.
Yes. So if you lose your sense of smell, it is one of the highest correlated factoids to deep depression.
I had no idea. When you bring up Gen Z, though, it's funny. So I stopped wearing fragrance for many years. My daughter, who's going to be 15, Sabrina, she started asking me for fragrance a couple of years ago. And I was like, where does she even know about fragrance? Like, there's no fragrance
TikTok.
In this house. Yeah, TikTok.
Yeah.
Totally. But she has a whole slew and she's super into it. So I think it's really interesting how that generation is embracing it. Now that you've had your company for a while, do you have aspirations of adding more product categories or are you happy in your niche?
So I did launch skincare in November of this year, and it was a formula that I was toying around with for the longest time. I do love skincare. I think who doesn't love skincare? I feel like skincare is one of those things that I felt like you can literally gift to anybody if it's really good, but also it really is self-care. And I wanted a scent in there that was allergen-free. I also think there's some misnomers about scent, especially in the US. I'm not really sure why, because if you go to Europe or Asia, they're not the same. Isn't that interesting?
That
like
is.
Here, there's this huge drive to be allergen-free in skincare. And it's very US-based, this movement. And the reasons are like, oh, we've been taught that fragrance is really bad for our skin. And the truth is, it's not fragrance that's bad for your skin. You can have something that smells great, but it is allergen-free. It's the allergens that are bad for your skin. And so we launched a skincare, but had a little bit of this natural extract blend of fragrances as allergen free. So you still get this nice experience because at the end of the day, scent is about pleasure. It is not this like health oriented thing in the sense that like, okay, it's going to make my skin look like before and after, right? It really is about, will it bring more pleasure to your routine? Will it bring more pleasure to your day? And so that was why I launched it. Am I going to expand skin? I don't know. I feel like I'm still very much a founder-led brand, and I know that I still have a lot more to say in fragrance. So fragrance is going to be our main focus. But yes, we will test other little formats along the way.
I read that your younger daughter is wondering when her brand is coming.
Oh my God. It's like every week.
Well, now you screwed yourself, B. You really screwed yourself with that one.
No, I actually thought about launching a fragrance. Her name is Sky. And I was like, oh, maybe I'll launch a fragrance named something Sky, you know? But then I was like, what if it's not a bestseller? What if I have to discontinue it? Like, I feel like it's a bad.
Oh my God, that's such a good point. Wait, how old is she now?
She's 6 and she can read now.
Oh,
I'm
screwed. Knows. She knows. Yeah, you're screwed.
And then my older daughter's like, oh, look at this bag. Look at this tote bag. It has my name on it.
Oh my God. That's amazing. I love it. So V, I'm so happy for you. It's such a beautiful collection. For everyone listening, you really should check it out, Ellis Brooklyn. How do you ultimately want to leave your mark? What's the headline for B. Shapiro?
Oh, B. Shapiro enjoyed life. That's my headline.
I love it.
The best part about fragrance, truly, I keep saying that it's about pleasure. And like at the end of the day, if you bring pleasure to somebody for their day, I feel like that's enough. It's not these like crazy grand ambitions, like I'm going to go change the fragrance world. It's more like, okay, I'm going to bring this gorgeous little moment to people's lives, hopefully.
I love it. Well, keep on it. It's wonderful. And I love hearing about the whole journey and just knowing you from way back when and seeing where you are today. It's so fun. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me, and you too.
Thanks so much for listening to Leave Your Mark, the podcast. If you want more career advice, be sure to pick up a copy of my best-selling book, Leave Your Mark. If you're on Instagram, make sure to follow at Leave Your Mark Podcast to stay up with the latest episodes. And of course, say hi to me at AlizaLichtXO. If you're on Twitter, definitely reach out at AlizaLicht. I would love to hear from you. If you want to subscribe to my newsletter or attend a future virtual mentoring event, go to AlizaLicht.com for more information. And just remember this, if change doesn't hurt a little, it's not change. Keep on rocking.